Hello again. I'm here with Kevin. Odyssey speaking, I was just bursting at the seam with excitement at the thoughts of a Legend of Zelda TV series that I wanted to do something with it. So I decided that Kevin's one of the bigger Zelda fans I know on Twitter. I'm not going to say biggest because I honestly don't know who that is and I don't want to start no beef. I know it's not me. I'm more of a Mario man. I excelled the well enough. I do think, I've always said, I think if nothing else, it is probably the most revered video game franchise. I know people have their opinions on the quality of all of their games, but there's just something about that franchise and how Nintendo handles it that no matter, you know, people dislike Skyward Sword and people disliked the two handheld games before In Between Worlds, but you announce a new Zelda game, and no matter how people felt about the last one, they're always excited. And I think part of it is because it's, you know, like, we have them often enough, but I don't think it's a franchise that has been worn down to the, you know, like, Call of Duty, you can't really get excited for. It comes out every year. Assassin's Creed's the same thing. People are excited for them, but it doesn't feel like an event when they're announced.
I'd probably agree with that. Yeah, it's pretty big,
and it's huge. And while it is one, it is like I said, it's one of gaming's most revered franchises. It's also one that hasn't really gone out of video games too much.
No,
I assume part of that is due to the questionable at best Zelda TV series from the early '90s,
late '80s,
which is remembered for one thing and one thing only, and that was Link's catchphrase. Excuse me, princess.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's that part of the fandom that I don't research into because it's too dark.
The Zelda had a dark period. I think it had a dark period during a good time where people just kind of were experimenting and it doesn't hold the franchise back. Because, you know, as revered as it is, nobody really mentions the CDI games either.
Ugh.
And those are pretty... Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the only mention of those come up in the Hyrule Historia, mostly. Like, and everybody else kind of pretends they don't exist. But they, unfortunately, are part of it.
Yeah, but I mean, to a lot of people, I mean, I'm not even going to get into Zelda timeline, but it's non-canon in the sense that it's not developed by Nintendo, nor was it on a Nintendo console, so.
Yeah.
That said, my initial thoughts when I heard that, okay, just to rephrase this, it came out yesterday, we're recording this on Saturday, pretty much about 24 hours ago, that
I woke up to hearing about it.
That Netflix and Nintendo are in the early stages of working on the Legend of Zelda TV series. Now, 9 out of 10 times, I would peg this as a big rumor, but it's coming from the Wall Street Journal, so I assume that they backed this up with several people and it wasn't just some guy. Oh my, like, there are some websites online, I'm not going to call names, that they hear it on the streets or whatever, and they'll run it as a story just because it's going to generate hits. I don't think the Wall Street Journal needs that. And, like, especially with the audience you're dealing with here, these are two publicly traded companies, and this is something that's going to impact their bottom line. So you just don't print something like this if you don't have any sources to back it up.
Well, lest we forget the probably the greatest April Fool's joke IGN ever pulled. Was that live-action trailer for a quote-unquote Zelda movie. That was back in, I think, 2007 or 2008. And for a good minute, everybody believed it.
And but I think part of it is people want to believe it. Mm-hmm. And I think this goes to several points. One, as a connoisseur of bad movies, I've seen a lot of video game movies. And people want that one great video game adaptation that they can hang their hat on. I mean, as a comic book fan, we get them a dime a dozen now. TV, comic books, cartoons. Yeah. As a video game fan, there are video game movies I would watch, but only for the sheer amount of good, bad entertainment they offer, in that they're not great movies, but they're really enjoyable in that weird, I can't believe they made this way.
Yeah. The closest, and it's sad to think that the closest they ever came to like a good video game movie was the Jake Gyllenhaal Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
Like, which probably any other context probably would have been just dismissed as just, oh, it's just kind of this useless movie. It's not a good movie regardless, but, you know, it...
It's probably the best that video games have.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird to think.
And this is across all mediums. I mean, it's not like they fared much better in animation. I haven't seen the Mortal Kombat TV, so I've heard good things about that, but I don't necessarily know if it's good because of if it's an adaptation of the Mortal Kombat style. But
I think part of the issue you come into is also because like a lot of the properties that have been developed for movies or whatever are not great like storytelling properties. Like it's like. They're going for it, but this is also because, like, most of them are done by, you know, our number one fan, Uwe Boll, who always gets, like, the bottom of the barrel, like, most obscure franchises and turns them, like, Blood Rain and shit. And everybody's like, who the hell thinks Blood Rain has a good story in it, you know? Well,
And that's the thing. It's like, it's these companies saying like, okay, you know what, we'll just give it to them. They'll make a movie out of it. We don't care about the end product. We get money off it is. And...
Yeah.
It works.
They seem to be putting a lot of care into The Last of Us, though. Are you caught up with all that?
I know. Yeah, it's being written by the people who wrote the video game and stuff like that.
Neil Druckmann, yeah.
My big fear with that is that seems to be a straight out. I guess it has to be an adaptation because it's all you want in game. And it's like, do you just want to see the actual game trends? Like, if you want, you could just kind of put the cutscenes together, I guess,
well,
if you want to.
Druckmann recently said in an interview he basically said, like, look, like, you know, don't expect this to be, like, the most faithful adaptation of this because we're condensing a 12, depending on how long you spend in it, 12 to 20-hour game into a, you know, a 2.5-hour movie. You know, and he even said, like, you know, like, there's probably a good... like 3 or 4 hours of cutscenes in that game, you know, and then all the in-game narrative, like that happens while you're playing it and everything as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's going to be like the Spark Notes version and have its own take on it. And the fact that Neil Druckmann is writing it is good because it's like, oh, it's not going to be like a Last Airbender situation where they just completely take it out of the author's hands and, they have no idea what's going on with their work, you know.
I will just say this much, though. I think it can go either way because, I mean, I think a prime example of that is whenever Frank Miller does his own movies, and those tend to be kind of... yeah. So, I mean, like, it's good that they're involved, but, you know, just because you write great video games doesn't necessarily mean you know how to write a good movie.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but it's still going to be a condensed version of that.
Yeah.
And you brought up a good point, and I think a point that a lot of people seem to have. One of the sticking points people tend to have with this Zelda announcement is the fact that I think a lot of people don't necessarily see Zelda as having a great story. I mean, the essential issue brought it down is a guy who gets 3 artifacts to save the princess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what Zelda is to a lot of people. And I guess in the back of my head, the way I see it, and this is why some of the video games I think would make great adaptations aren't necessarily story heavy, but mm-hmm. they have a character and universe that you can play in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Zelda offers that type of sandbox for you, and that it works in the sense that there is no, you know, like, it's not like every Zelda game is in this one universe where everything's kind of, okay, this happens, then this happens, that means this game's mm-hmm. after that game. It's like, okay, we're going to skip ahead 100 years, and we're going to have a similar story. It's like a fable. It's the same story, but in different settings, and you can play around with that with different types of characters, different types, you know, like there's certain stuff that won't carry over, but you have different types of gameplay, turning into a wolf, being able to travel through time, travel through alternate dimensions, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what Zelda has going for it right now, is that it's going to allow you to go into this world and be like, okay, we have these characters that people are familiar with. What do we want to do with them? Instead of saying, like, okay, here's Ocarina of Time. Let's just adapt that to a 13-episode miniseries.
Yeah. It's weird because I'll say, like, that I think, I don't know, it's hard for me to feel strongly one way or the other about it, because I agree with what you're saying about, like, oh, there's room for, like, it's because, like, I mean, it's canon that basically, like, you know, with the timeline and everything, because, like, they released the Hyrule Historia that basically after, whatchamacallit?
Skyward Sword.
Skyward Sword, that basically they confirmed, A, that Skyward Sword is basically the origin story for all of Zelda, like, all of this, the history of this world, and then you have basically the whole thing, like, it's like that game, the Minish Cap and Four Swords thing, and then Ocarina of Time, and then Ocarina of Time basically, because of the time travel stuff, breaks the series into three different timelines because of the different, you know, like, you know, because of the paradoxes of time travel and all that stuff. And then you have, like, oh, this, these three or four games take place in this time period where this one cataclysmic event caused it to go this way, or blah, blah, you know, so on and so forth. And so, like, there, it's like, yeah, it's like, basically there's, like, this continuity and timeline, but they all kind of, like, it's kind of loose and fast, you know, because of the time travel stuff. So it's like, you could essentially create a whole new story. Like, I mean, there's no confirmation what because of the Historia coming out before Link Between Worlds last year, or 2 years ago, I guess, like, there's no telling which timeline that takes place in. I'm super nerding out here because this stuff.
Link Between Worlds is a sequel to Link to the Past, so that takes place at the end of the timeline.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, bottom line being is that, like, you could essentially set a new story that has the same basic principle, because the idea that they set forth in Skyward Sword is that basically with the whole conflict between Link, Zelda, and Demise at the time, who then later basically becomes Ganon and Ganondorf. Spoiler alert, guys, I'm sorry. The game's been out for 3 or 4 years. You can you can go play it if you want to, or just listen to what I'm saying. Like, that basically it's just a doomed cycle. This is before even the time travel paradoxes of Ocarina of Time, like, that it's just a doomed cycle that's going to just repeat itself for centuries and millennia on end, because of the Triforce and all just this basically destiny, you know, fantasy stuff. And so basically, essentially, you could just create a new story and set it either canon or non-canon, just within any one of those timelines or whatever you wanted to do, essentially. My reservation, really, I don't know, like, I sit here and go, like, you know, Twilight Princess is probably the most, like, that and Majora's Mask are probably the two most, like, lore-heavy ones out of the bunch, and at the same time, it kind of feels like the whole reason I feel like Zelda is special as a game franchise, even though it follows such a formula, is that it makes you feel like you're, you know, the hero of the story, you know, and it's like, it kind of like plays into the entire idea of the interactivity of the medium. And that it's just tough because then it's like, well, you know, we haven't had Link actually speak in any of these games. He is basically a stand-in for the player.
Yeah, I'm happy you said that, because it's driving me nuts that everybody keeps on saying he's a mute. He's not a mute. The games always assume that you're responding.
Yeah, you're responding emotionally as you're playing. Just because there's no indication that Link is a mute. It's just that, like, it's not his. The reason why it's called The Legend of Zelda is it's not his story. It's the story of the world around him in every single game. And that's never been more clear to me than in, like, Majora's Mask and Twilight Princess, where Majora's Mask is very much like, kind of as with the new 3DS remake coming out, people have talked about it. It's like the most, like, weird and bizarre and almost, but at the same time, one of the most, like, densely populated game of them all, because it has all these really memorable side characters. And it's like, that's because the whole point of the games, to me at least, I mean, feel free to disagree with me on this, is that you, yeah, Link is your avatar and you are exploring this world and seeing the impact that you make on it. And it's like, so it's like an RPG that's not really an RPG. It's like, it's still a linear set story, but you're experiencing the impact of, you know, your deeds as Link, essentially, or whatever you want to name your character. I know some people, you know, change the name, or I'm a weirdo purist, so I don't
do that.
I think it's also because I'm lazy.
and I think that's going to be a big hurdle for people to overcome. Like, there are ways around it, but I just don't see them trying to pursue a show where the main character doesn't speak. Now, the alternative I've heard people suggest is kind of making a show where Link isn't the main character, and I think that has potential as well. If you take Hyrule Warriors, for example. Hyrule Warriors kind of exists outside of the Zelda timeline, but it kind of condenses the core element into this kind of war, this giant war that's going on, and you can do something like that where there is a war going on, and you're probably... your focus on the different factions within that, the good guys, the bad guys, the soldiers, royalty, and stuff like that. And I think that allows you, one, it gives you that element of having multiple viewpoints and multiple characters. And I think that fans have come to kind of accept the fact that every Zelda game, every Zelda, I guess, mini-verse has its own set of characters and rules. Like, the characters you're introduced to in Twilight Princess are different than the ones in Majora's Mask, who are different from the ones in Skyward Sword. So I don't think people would be opposed to you creating a new set of characters who, you know, who can be your eyes and ears to this world, and kind of have Zelda, Ganon, and this sort kind of as these big background pairs that you see every so often, but not the focus of the show.
Yeah. It, I mean, like, and what you're kind of describing is almost like a kind of, like, Deadwood-esque, like, I don't know if you've ever watched that show, but, like, where it's basically about, like, Deadwood or The Wire, where it's, like, more about, like, a place, you know, and how, like, you know, a city or whatever, like, can be, like, a living, breathing community rather than that's where everything is kind of connected and, you know, like, affected by actions rather than just...
I was going to say kind of as a modern example, even though it has a central character, I would say Gotham is like that, where it's driven by James Gordon's narrative, but the show is about the city and how different people react to different things and learning about the corruption and the various elements of play. And I think that could work. I mean, again, I don't necessarily know, because I guess the problem with that, and this is based on the description, is it does seem to be focused more on a younger audience. Mm-hmm. I think they said kid-friendly tone, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be SpongeBob or something like that.
You know, it's good that you say that, because I think, you know, there was recently, Sam Rockwell described the Poltergeist remake, that he's starring in this year, as being very kid friendly. And a lot of people are like, what? You know, because basically, you know, it's all these like people who are my age or a little bit older who are like remembering seeing Poltergeist in theaters or whatever and thinking it was this big. It's freaking like everybody says, oh, Tobey Hooper directed it. No, Spielberg directed it. And it's a very Spielberg production. Like, it may be like intense and kind of scary, but it's like, it's very, you know, like, you know, like, it's thrilling, you know, like, and, but it's like, I think people don't think that kids can handle what they really can handle, and that's one of the things that drives me nuts in the world, is, like, people assuming that kids are, like, need to be these, like, they're idiots and need to be sheltered, which, you know, a lot of kids are idiots, but that's, I mean, you can't really, like, blame that on them, they're kids, I mean, like, you know, come on, like,
it's up to any, I don't want to turn this into a parenting thing, but it is up to people to kind of nurture them on what is acceptable for them and not. And people, you know, at some point they're going to roll into this. But at the other end of the spectrum, I do think a lot of times it is the creators and stuff who are like, oh, this has to be for kids. So that means dumb everything down to its basic essentials. And I think that's what people are afraid of when they hear kid-friendly. But then I think of something like Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is a kid-friendly show.
Or Batman Brave and the Bold.
Oh, Batman Brave and the Bold. Or even an example, because the comparison they made in the article was Game of Thrones. And to me, Lord of the Rings is a very family-friendly version of that high fantasy concept.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has its serious moments, but it's not like, you know, it's not like, I love Game of Thrones, but compare that to random ass shots and people being stabbed and beheaded.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily get that in Lord of the Rings, but you still get, I mean, I think you get a trilogy that most people would consider fantastic.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, it's something that can be kid-friendly and be, like, smart and mature. You know, that's kind of the point we get in that is, like, I mean, honestly, like, it bugs the hell out of me. Like, I remember there was somebody, and as a Zelda fan, this really bugs the hell out of me, because there was somebody going, like, oh, I'm, like, talking to me one day at a GameStop, which, you know, whatever, like, why I was listening to this person, I don't know. But, I was trying to be polite, and he's like, oh, you imagine how much better, like, a Zelda game would be if it had, like, blood and decapitations. I'm like, then it wouldn't be Zelda. Like, it would be any one of your grim, dark fantasy video games. Like,
yeah, and that's the same way when people say that Zelda should be more like Dark Souls or should take a cue from Darksiders. I'm like, yeah, but that's not what it wants to be. I mean, it works in the sense that it's a game that's approachable to anybody. You can be 30 and enjoy it. You can be 10 and enjoy it. Because aesthetically, it's neutral.
Well, and then you look at, like, the one entry, you know, famously, that is not rated E, it's rated T, is Twilight Princess, which I guess Twilight Princess these days, like, I'm going to just go on a side here and say that one, it catches a lot of shit. Oops, sorry, I didn't know if I could cuss on here, but, it catches a lot of crap, you know, from, I guess, some of the diehard fans who want the games to be more, like, I guess, hardcore and difficult and everything. And I guess to some people, Twilight Princess is just too easy of a game. Whatever, that's neither here nor there. But
something like that, even Twilight Princess, I don't go like, oh, that's like really dark. And
no, it's just mature, but not in a way that like I think people mistake mature or whatever for this
aesthetic.
Yeah, well, people, you know.
I mean, a great example I use, because I've been rewatching these recently, is the way that people reacted or still react to, like, Tim Burton's Batman,
mm-hmm.
where they talk about it being, like, this dark and gritty stuff. I'm like, no!
No, it's not. It's really goofy.
Like, it's dark in the sense that he literally just, like, films on back on back and back, but it's not. Yeah, it's not. It's really. It's goofy. Like,
yeah.
It's not. It's not Batman or Robin. But like, you could see the foundation was there.
Yeah. I don't think kid friendly is a thing that any Zelda, like, that's the least of the things that I would ever be worried about. Like,
yeah,
like I think people hear kid friendly and they think, you know, like, Looney Tunes, you know, like, which is not what they mean at all. They just mean that it's like, you know, kid friendly can mean a variety of things. But like I said, to me, all Zelda games are kid friendly because it's not anything that I would ever have like a kid watching or playing and have to go, oh, I'm going to have to explain that bit to you real quick, you know, because you're not old enough to know or what. It's like, to me, the games are kid-friendly, even with Twilight Princess. And yes, Twilight Princess gets a little serious, it's a little somber compared to the other ones. But Wind Waker is pretty serious in a lot of ways, you know? Like, and that's the one that everybody calls the kiddie game of the group, you know?
Yeah,
like,
and that
drives me nuts, because...
I would say that Wind Waker deals with more serious issues than other Zelda games. I mean... Stuff,
yeah.
And, you know, like the whole thing with his grandmother at the beginning,
oh,
and kind
yeah.
of, and you know, you think about that implies that his parents are dead somewhere.
Yeah, but he and his sister are orphans. They were like,
yeah.
Or like the like Wind Waker is, whereas you had like Majora's Mask before it, that deals with like reliving the end of the world over and over again. Like, how much more grim dark can you get? But like, and that whole game, you know, as people have shown in the the analysis, you know, and the retrospectives of it over the last 15 years, that it's a game that's literally about the grieving process.
Yeah.
You know, like, both the literal and figurative grieving process of both the literal end of the world and their internal end of the world, because a lot of people are dealing with death in that game. You know, or Wind Waker's dealing with the fact that the world has already ended. You know, the way they handle Ganondorf, which is like the one and only time that Ganondorf is actually a sympathetic character. Like, because he's a guy who's presented as, you know, he's like, this is the Ganondorf from Ocarina of Time who has somehow or another, I forget exactly the details, like, escaped, you know, his fate and gone into hiding, and like, his entire world is gone. Like, you know, his, this is a guy who's from the desert, and now he comes back to a world that's nothing but obliterated, an ocean and a few scant islands here and there. And he has this big, beautiful speech in there talking about, like, remembering the sand and the wind blowing on his face and that how he longs for that. And it's, like, pretty heavy stuff, you know? Like, but it's, like, but kids can handle that because handled in an intelligent way that doesn't condescend.
Yeah, and I think that's, I'm hoping that's what Nintendo goes for, and Nintendo and Netflix goes for with this show, because Zelda deals with a lot of themes. It just doesn't beat you over the head with them.
You're right.
Where it's like, okay, this is about abandonment. This is about abandonment. He's an orphan. He's an orphan. Yeah. You know, it's even kind of continuing on Wind Waker, it's even about, like, the feelings of adults, because the reason that Hyrule was drowned is because the king would rather freeze it than actually defend it, and they leave it up to miners to do their bidding. 100%.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, there's never been a Zelda game quite like that one in the way that it deals with, like, the fact that, yeah, like, adults are fucking stupid, and he basically, you know, the whole Hyrule, the King of Hyrule, he basically says to Link, like, you know, Ganondorf and I we're the ones to blame for the mess that the world is in, so you two need to, you know, you and Zelda need to go and make it a better world. You know, that heartbreaking scene at the end where he's like, you know what, it's my time's over. Like, you know, I'm going to stay here, you know, and while this fortress falls to the bottom of the ocean, and you need to go live your life.
Yeah, you know? So, I mean, there's a lot of there they can deal with.
And honestly, none of that's not anything that wasn't kind of brought up in, like you said, like something like Avatar The Last Airbender or Legend of Korra.
Yeah, or, you know, there are other shows that, I mean, the problem is we don't see them as often, but there are shows that are written for kids that are intelligent in how they approach these things. I've heard good things about Gravity Fall and a lot of these modern cartoons. I mean, I don't watch them. I don't have enough time for everything, but there are ways to handle it. And even kind of going back to the action, I would say Ninja Turtles, the current one on Nick, is kind of valiant in how, you know, like, the Ninja Turtles has always been an iffy one because they are ninjas and they fight with deadly weapons, but they have no problem showing that, and they don't need blood and guts and limbs and all that other stuff to get across the fact that that happens. Though, that does bring up a problem that people have mentioned, and I do kind of agree with, is how do you do a live-action Zelda TV series well, as far as, like, designs go, because one of the great things about Zelda has always been the rich, rich amount of various races and enemies that inhabit the world. I mean, almost everything is unhuman-like, except for the Hyans. So, yeah, how do you do, like, the Zorans and the Gorons and the Mobians and the Zafoys and stuff like that? Like, do you hire a bunch of people in costumes? Do you try to do CG? Yeah. Like, I can't imagine. I imagine costumes would look awful and CG would be expensive.
Well, it's kind of the thing. Like, that was a concern of mine. I thought of that, but, I mean, I wasn't sure how big of a concern because, you know, Netflix has deep pockets, you know, so I'm not worried about their ability to have budget. It's just that, like, I mean, yeah, it's like you said, like, you have the Gorons, who are these, like, giant, like, gorilla turtle things, basically, you know, made of rocks, and then the Zora, which are the fish people, and their design has gotten more elaborate as time has gone on, you know, like, Or yeah, and it's like, yeah, the Hylians, but that's still a lot of, like, the Hylians and the Kokiri all still have, like, a ton of makeup that would be required, you know, with, like, the ears and stuff like that. And it's like, it's just, how do you translate the iconography of the art direction of the Zelda franchise that in so many different iterations and so many different design periods has retained something so recognizably of that franchise. Like, you know, and, you know, it's like I said, like the Phil thing with, they got done with the N64 games and then they went on to do the Wind Waker. I mean, they did the Oracle games, but I don't really care about those. those were pretty close to like older stuff, but then they did the Wind Waker stuff, which was so much, you know, like, of a departure, and they're, you know, everybody's like, oh, it's like baby Zelda, you know, for little baby kids and everything. Like, and like I said, like, we've already covered Wind Waker's matureness, but like, and then it's like, but then they, after Wind Waker and those handhelds that came after it, then they went on to do Twilight Princess, which is much more of like almost like downright JRPG in its design, you know, but still maintain that iconic Zelda look to it. You know, like they had, you know, Link, Zelda, and Ganondorf all basically look just like Link, Zelda, and Ganondorf. And so on and so forth. And, you know, and then Skyward Sword was kind of like mixed the two together, you know, that the, like the adult stuff with the cell shading and made this kind of really cool watercolor look. And it's kind of like, to me, the problem not even just arises from the budget cost of it, but also the fact that Zelda, these games always just look so just like painterly and gorgeous and rich in the way that they just bright colors and they're just vibrant. And it's like, how, you know, when I hear something like Game of Thrones-ish, I get worried because I'm like, ugh, is it going to be like all like muted greens, like earth tones, like grays and browns?
Yeah, well, that's what I wonder as well, especially being that, like, I love the design stuff out of Zelda costume, but like, I mean like the green tonic hue is, I think that's going to be a sticking point for a lot of actors and stuff like that, because it does look kind of goofy in real life.
Of course it does.
Even though you see people do fantastic in cosplay, I think there's a different level that people expect when it comes to TV shows. I mean, an example, I mean, granted, it goes for a darker thing, but Arrow uses a much darker shade of green. The Flash uses a darker shade of red, because the brightness, which works on page and works in a visual medium like that, where it has to pop, probably does not translate as well to TV when you want it to be more consistent and you have to deal with stuff like lighting and that stuff. So,
well,
yeah.
I mean, and like having worked in the, and working in the film industry as I do, like, I mean, I'll tell you the reason why. I mean, for Arrow, there's story reasons why that's all shot in the dark, you know, in nighttime scenes, because duh. But with Flash, I like that show a lot, but one of my main problems is that the majority of it is done at night. And I'm like, Flash is a daytime hero, you know?
But you don't want to show the costume.
You don't want to show the costume or the, like, bright lighting, like daylighting, like, shows off all the problems with your visual effects. Like, it's much harder to hide those things, and that's what I worry about with a Zelda thing. Like, I think you could do with, I mean, like, Game of Thrones has gotten more cinematic looking as it's gone on, and like has done some really fantastic work with, like, with lighting as it's gone on, like, and diversity of location. So, like, in that regard, I think drawing influence from that show would be a good thing, especially from its later seasons. But I worry that we would get into Smallville or Flash or Arrow territory, not to knock on the other two shows, but Smallville for sure, where you're using darkness and everything to hide the seams, as it were.
Yeah. And yeah, it doesn't work. I mean, we've mentioned Wind Waker and Skyward Sword, and even those are really bright and vibrant worlds.
Yeah.
And I, you know, like, and kind of going back to another point, I think those are also two games you can look at, because those games have a bigger focus on exploration than they do on character.
Yeah.
And that's another angle you can possibly take with that. It would limit the amount of, like, creatures or race species you would need in any single episode. Again, kind of, like, to me, in my head, there are two shows that stick to my mind that I can possibly see this modern. You can have the Avatar thing, where it's kind of him going around and training And, you know, like each season will probably focus on him finding a piece of the Triforce or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other one, and this is another show that was, you know, I think this was aimed more at a teen audience, but Samurai Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took me a while to make that connection, but yeah, that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah,
because
right.
Wasn't Jack himself, it's been a while since I watched it, he was more or less kind of silent throughout that whole series, yeah?
Yeah, he didn't, I believe there's an episode he, like, no, I think nobody speaks. But yeah, it's a show that he doesn't speak as much, like, he talks when he needs to, and then You just have a bunch of colorful characters around him.
Yeah. I mean, and everything you're describing is like, this would be so, it makes me just kind of sit there and go, this would be so much better suited for animation.
Oh, and I agree, but I am completely biased. I think almost everything is better suited for animation.
Yeah, well, something like this specifically. You know.
Yeah, I mean, comic book shows should be animated. Video games, animated.
Yeah.
It's, you know, because, I mean, and not, you know, because I know the first thing people think of when you go back to, we mentioned the movies before, but you go back and you think of, like, the Super Mario Brothers movie, and, like, what they did with the Goombas, where they just made giant people with tiny heads.
Oh man, let's not talk about that movie because oh yeah, well, that's not a good example. But I worry about it. Like, I mean, because I'm sitting here going like, I mean, like I said, like not only did I just I'm just not convinced that myself that this would I just don't I'm not convinced. Like if they had said, oh, Netflix is developing an animated series of Zelda, I'd been like, cool, like what are you doing, like, are you, you know, but when they say live action, I'm like, ugh, like that doesn't sound like a good idea, because honestly, it's like you said, like honestly, like the design and everything is so iconic and like awesome in the games, but I mean, and there are some people who do like tremendous cosplay jobs. But, I mean, like any of these kind of Japanese fantasy series, when you take that out of its, you know, more stylized context and put it in, like, you know, real life, it looks really freaking silly. And so I'm sitting there going, like, how are they going to pull this off, like, without it just looking just absolutely, like, atrocious?
Yeah, and that's, that's the biggest problem, is translating the design of this world into something that they can do on a TV budget. Like, I know you mentioned Game of Thrones and you mentioned Netflix, but like Game of Thrones isn't a cheap show. It's probably
no.
Isn't 10 episodes per season.
Yeah, it's the most expensive show in television history.
And I mean, it works out for them. It works out tremendously for HBO. And
but I mean, even then, there's still like they still have things they can't really realize from the books. You know?
Oh yeah. And the stuff that they kind of introduce and it's really skip over, or you know, I think it's season 2 where most of the budget went into like the episode 9,
yeah,
to do that epic battle, and it's like, yeah, like there's a lot of stuff that even Game of Thrones does well, but you it's a very special show, Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because even everybody on that show is human for the most part, except for dragons and the ice warriors and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, but it has probably the greatest visual effects ever in a TV show, but it, like, again, it's not cheap. It costs hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars to make that show every season.
Yes, and then I've always found this fun, but you also have to worry about age, because for the most part, Ink is usually depicted about 10 years old.
Yeah, he's usually a child.
Yeah, I like how adult Ink is like 17. Like, yes, that's an adult, but
yeah.
And that's the oldest he's been.
Yeah,
and, like, so yeah, I assume they're gonna go higher in age because child actors are just not necessarily that they're bad. People have their opinions on that, but it's just there's a lot more rules in working with children in any field.
Yeah,
that just would make it really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna do it, you gotta go with the older Link because it makes more production sense.
Yeah, and you don't want Link hitting puberty halfway through your show.
Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Stark children. I mean, they're the main primary children of the show. And I mean, like, Bran used to be this little tiny little kid in season 1, and now he's like, his voice has gotten deeper and everything. And I'm like, the show's only taken place over the course of like a year and a half, but or something like that. But it's like, or maybe 2 years. But it's like, you know, he's obviously hit puberty in the meantime because he was probably like 12 or something when they started filming, and now he's like, you know, 14 or 15, and you know, Sophie Turner's 18, and so on and so forth. Like all the kids have, you know, hit puberty or gotten to adulthood. So it's kind of like, I mean, they've done a good job of just like, they don't even address it in the show. They're just like, forget it. Like, we're just not even going to talk about this.
Yeah. I mean, the other alternative, you couldn't do this in Zelda, is what they did with Walt on Oz, where they just kind of wrote him out of the show.
Something like that. But yeah, I feel like they would probably like go for the like teenage Link, you know, like in it, like Ocarina of Time or Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword. Like, cause I think, I mean, but honestly, like if I'm being honest, like other than the N64 and Wind Waker style games, like in all the, like the Link Between Worlds and A Link to the Past and all that stuff, like the older, the more classic ones, like he honestly looks like a teenager. Just it's just drawn differently than adult Link from Ocarina of Twilight and Skyward.
And to be fair, they do seem to be making him older in general. He's older in Twilight Princess. He's older in Skyward Sword. He looks older in the Wii U version.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like they don't refer to him as childhood anymore.
Yeah, it's like the Link in Smash Brothers is like, yeah, it's like definitely the Twilight Princess Link, and they've been doing that since the Wii Smash Brothers and everything. But
yeah,
I think they would definitely go with that. I mean, but the alternative is, of course, like you said, or it could be that they like do like a more like Ocarina thing, but it's like maybe they just like do Ocarina of Time just as a straight adaptation and have a child actor for the first season or two, and then have him get the Master Sword at the end of the season and just recast the role.
Or, they could do an Arrow and just kind of have it set in current day, and if they want to Ocarina of Time, flashback that stuff, and you kind of have a story that way. Yeah. Again, you know, like when people, like I've read, I'm reading an article on Forbes as well right now, when people say that there isn't enough story here, I'm just thinking like, I'm thinking more like, how do you distill this into just a 13-episode season?
Yeah.
I mean, I assume that's what they do on Netflix. I mean, there are so many different, like, there are certain stuff in the game that, you know, you would have to go. Like, to me, the core of Zelda is the trio, Ganon, Zelda, Link, the Triforce, you know, that symbolism, stuff like that. Like, it would suck, but yeah, like, it would be really stupid to kind of have dungeon format where he goes into an area and finds a new item or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that can't be, like, I mean, they could do that. I mean, theoretically, like have each episode cover, like, a basically one of those, like, those tasks. But yeah, at the same time, like, I almost would rather them do something the way that, I mean, I know they specifically said it's going to be about him and the princess and everything, and like, but at the same time, I'd almost rather them have, like, Majora's Mask. Like, just do a straight adaptation of that, because, like, that, to me, is something a little more... It's probably, weirdly enough, despite the time travel stuff in it, like, it's probably the most, like, linear story of all the... because it's, like I was saying earlier, it's actually more, like, focused on Link's relationship with the people of Termina than it is with, like, the quest to save the world and everything. Like, that's there, but it's like, that's all like to frame the larger context of him understanding the people of this city and this region and everything. So it's like, that would actually probably, that would to me lend itself better to television than something like Ocarina or whatever.
I don't necessarily think it needs to be a straight adaptation, but I do also think that there are ways. I wouldn't do like an episode a dungeon, but I think there are ways to kind of implement the dungeons in a interesting manner. Like maybe have them be like a mid-season. One, you wouldn't refer to them as dungeons. I always find that weird in general.
Yeah.
But just kind of like, you know, like again, I hate to go back to Avatar, but there's certain episodes where, like the library, where they're in that library navigating that area or navigating the sea,
which
is kind of like this task that's put in front of Link that he has to overcome to either prove his worth to this person or that person or to earn this and that.
And that's really the kind of the main concern is, like, because, I mean, like, obviously, like, you have like the overarching narratives in these games, like, and the lore and everything, which is all cool, but like at the end of the day, it's very much a like, go here, do this, go here, do that kind of like series of accomplishments, essentially.
Yeah, and that works in video games because it gives you busy work.
Yeah, but it's like something that actually needs a more structured, coherent narrative. Like, I have my doubts on how that translates. But again, like, I mean, like, I'll say, like, at the end of the day, like, I mean, like you said, like, it could be like something, like, you know, Avatar really streamlined it well. Like you said, it took, like, the fact that it was like, oh, well, okay, he's got to, each season is going to be him mastering an element. Okay, well, the idea is he's doing that and gaining a better understanding of like the philosophy behind each element while spending time, like in the world around him. And how like each little task he has to do, like to save this town or whatever, like helps him understand, you know, his role as the Avatar and everything. Like, and so I guess, yeah, you could do something like that with Link, where it's like, okay, each little seemingly menial task or whatever is like part of a larger, like, thematic framework of like how to, like, how he has to like understand his role as the hero and everything. But I mean, that's getting into really navel gazing Zelda stuff right there. We're getting a little too much into that, I think, as at the end of the day, it's about him slaying an evil lord and rescuing a princess.
And I think ultimately, and I mean, I assume they said, you know, an article says that Nintendo would have some involvement hands on with this, but I think at the end, I think what's going to be important is that this show understands what it is, how long it needs to go for, and have an outline. It can't be like a show where they kind of, like, again, Netflix is a bit different in that you do the whole season at once, usually. Yeah. So you'd have to have a game plan for the entire season anyhow. You can't course correct halfway through. I mean, you could, but you wouldn't have fan feedback and stuff like that. Yeah. So you have to have a game. I mean, that's one of the reasons Avatar worked, is that they had a game plan for three seasons and they executed that. One of the reasons why, Korra does not work as well, because they didn't know what they had.
Well, I'll point out, like, I mean, about Korra, like, I mean, that's, I feel like they had a game plan, but it was like, it's just different. Like, to me, Korra is, I've been critical of that show in the past, and still am certain elements critical, especially the final season, I think, which is kind of a, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you just got to look at it as more of a footnote to season three and everything, which is really more or less like kind of like the more climactic, you know, and whatever, like, I still say, well, yeah, but there's some basic storytelling problems with season four. But I don't know if it's that because, like, they didn't have an end game.
Okay. Now, I'm saying as far as, like, I think if you compare the two, I think Avatar is a much stronger show, because they tend to have, they had a three season arc, and that was it. Korra, I mean, especially how they broke it up, I mean, because technically book one and two was supposed to be one season and stuff like that, and that broken up. But either way, yes, I do think it's important, and it does seem like Nintendo's going to be hands-on with this one, which, again, could work or could be to its detriment, because, again, going back to that Frank list, sometimes you don't want to let go of stuff that may not work in a medium you don't understand. Yeah. But at the same time, we've seen what happens when they're completely hands-off. So,
Well, I mean, like, and honestly, like, I don't really know how. I mean, yeah, like with Washington, with not Washington Post, Wall Street Journal reporting it, like, it seems more legit. But at the same time, like, I, you know, like myself, like, at the end of the day, I'm kind of taking this as seriously as I take the Sinister Six or Suicide Squad movie.
Those are different. I mean, that's Sony and whatever they're doing with Spider-Man. It seems like Sony doesn't know what they want to do with Spider-Man.
It's not even just that, but it's more like I sit there and like they keep talking like, oh, we're making a Suicide Squad movie. And I'm like, okay, that sounds like it would be a cool idea. And it sounds like you have an idea of what you want to do, but are you really going to do it? And like, I sit here and a lot of times, I mean, shit, like the Assassin's Creed movie, Like, when is that ever going to happen? Apparently, Michael Fassbender's been attached to that for about 4 years now. You know, it's like that, you know, there's been like six games since then or so. I can't ever keep, like, I've lost track of this series, but.
I would also say, I think the biggest no-no, the biggest sign to me right now, is they don't have anybody on it. Like, they're literally looking for writers. Yeah. Like, those are the first people you get. They have nobody. So, if Netflix has an idea, Nintendo has an IP, they want to come together.
Yeah, and so it's like, to me, I sit here and go like, okay, well, you know, get back to us when you have like more like of a, like 100, like when you're at like 65% sure, because I mean, like, I'm sitting here like, no, like, there's potential for this to be a really cool thing, and there's potential to be for it to be a disaster, but I'm sitting there going like, I mean, a lot of times, and this is probably honest to me, I think, is what happened with this whole Assassin's Creed movie. Until I see actual footage, I don't believe it exists. And I'm genuinely pretty, like, I'm getting more convinced by the day that this might be what's going on with The Last of Us. Is like, studios will buy the rights to these things just as a placeholder. Like, basically, and I think this happened with, like, I feel like this happened a long time ago. I think this is part of, like, the whole Watchmen development story. Like, you know, as everybody knows, this the history of how that got finally made into a movie, like, that was bouncing around Hollywood for like 20 years almost before it became the movie that it is. Like, it was like under three different studios.
I mean, I think the most famous example is John Carter, which they marketed as a film that took decades to come to the screen.
Like, no, it just was like, it was just Disney had the rights to it for that long, you know. Or whoever, like, that's a lot of times, like, something will be, and right now, honestly, Zelda is experiencing a real renaissance in popularity, because Nintendo is kind of, like, having a big comeback of sorts, because, you know, yeah, they struggled throughout the life cycle of the Wii, and they struggled in that launch year of the Wii U, but now, like, right now, like, you know, what is it, Metacritic named Nintendo, like, Publishers of the Year? You know, and like, you know, last year, because, I mean, honest to God, they just had that many great games on the 3DS and the Wii U. And now they've got, like, the whole, this, you know, the Smash Brothers thing with the Amiibo thing that's, like, just taken off in a way that they never even probably dreamed of.
Or could maintain.
But could maintain, apparently, yeah. Or, like, you know, the fact that, like, you know, look at how, like, the Majora's Mask 3DS XLs, like, of the new 3DS, like, sold out in 15 minutes. 15, like, that's not even, like, a few hours. That's, like, within minutes of the announcement, it was gone. And now there's, like, scalpers, like, it's, like, worth, like, $1,000+, you know?
I need to sell mine.
Yeah, there's, like, a new, you know, there's a new main game coming out in the franchise this year, plus a remake of one of the more, like, beloved kind of cult classics of the series. Like, Zelda's, you know, like, I mean, Nintendo knows that this is their, like, Mario may be their, like, mascot, but Zelda is their, like, flagship.
Yeah.
Zelda is what keeps, like, that, in my opinion, my humble opinion, they make the Mario games, like, and whether they sell or not, Nintendo couldn't give less of a crap, because it's their mascot. But the Zelda thing, like, they know that that's, like you said, it's an event every year when they announce it. And I think
that should be, and like I said, it's one of the things that keeps it one of the gaming's most revered franchises, is because how it's treated. And I kind of looked into this when this was announced, just to kind of give people a rough idea of even when to kind of expect this. The Netflix Marvel shows were first announced in November 2013, and the first one premieres this April, so that's about
Daredevil, right?
Yeah, and that's about a year and a half from the announcement of that. Yeah. So this isn't an announcement. So I would not expect this show
anytime
before the fall of 2016 at the earliest.
Oh, I wouldn't even expect it until 2017.
Yeah, I would say 2017, but I'm just saying. So yeah, it's a ways off.
Yeah. I just think it's like, I mean, it's a way for Netflix. Because if they literally did buy the IP rights, then good on them. I mean, like, because I'd rather them probably do it. Though, I mean, personally, I'd rather see somebody like, I don't know, like Cartoon Network or something, or Warner Brothers Animation or something like that take on it. Like, because Warner Brothers has done so well with the DC Comics properties in animation, like not as much in, you know, live action, but they, you know, like I said earlier, like a Zelda TV series that was kind of like, something like Batman Brave and the Bold, like I'd be so down for that.
Yeah, and you know, kind of going to a separate point. I do think there was a rumor, part of a rumor during the leak of Sony that Sony is working on an animated Mario film, and I do think that this rumor kind of gives credence to that one, because if nothing else, it's showing that they are talking seriously to outsiders about bringing their properties to different mediums. Well, and
let me ask you this: then, do you think that maybe they can trace all that all the way back to Hyrule Warriors?
Well, I think Hyrule Warriors was part of something different in their movement of just kind, we have no games, just get people to work with us with our IPs. And I think that's a very important thing. And as much as I love the company, I think it's one of their biggest failings is that they've been really, and it's a good thing that they're protective of their IPs, but it means that it stagnates the people who are exposed to it. Because growing up, for better or worse, we had, you know, we had three Super Mario cartoons. We had a Zelda cartoon. We had Captain N. You had the Super Mario Brothers movies. You had several Sonic cartoons. We have Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason that people of our generation still, I mean, yes, having fantastic games is very important, and that's one of the reasons they remain relevant franchises. But you also have to have, like, you have to bring in new audiences. And these shows can absolutely suck, and this movie could be awful if the Mario one turns out. But the fact of the matter is, it brings the IPs back into the mainstream conscience in a way that new games won't, especially being that when your reputation is that you make good games, making good games doesn't really seem that special to a lot of people. As we've seen with the Wii U, Nintendo has made, like you said, Publisher of the Year last year, probably the best lineup of games last year by any company, well, I guess, if they were. And nobody really bought the Wii U in great numbers, so it's not, it's more than just great games. You have to make it a brand that people know. Like, people know Angry Birds. Say what you will about the quality of the games, people know Angry Birds. People know Minecraft and stuff like that, because those properties exist beyond that. And I think Amiibos was the first step, because it's getting people reinvigorated with your franchises, because everybody wants to buy these damn toys.
Well, because I was going to say, like, I mean, what is it? Like, the problem that I've always had is with Nintendo, it's not just Nintendo. Like, I feel like Nintendo has, like, huge presence overseas, obviously, in its homeland of Japan. But, I mean, for hell's sake, like, look at the way, like, I mean, look at the differences in, like, the collector's editions and everything that we get here in the States versus these really elaborate ones that they get in Europe. Nintendo just, I can't really blame them too much, but they look at the numbers every year and they think, well, is there an audience for these products, you know, in the States? You know, like, it honestly took until the Amiibos for them to maybe think differently about it, because up until then, like, was it like they had, like, you know, for Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire, the remakes, like, they had, like, what, like, special editions of the actual 2DS or whatever in other countries, but in the U.S. it was like, here, have a code for a bunch of potions. Like, I mean, so I can't really blame, but I can't really blame them, because I'm sitting there going, I mean, like, you know, it sucks for us U.S. people who want the cool stuff, but at the same time, it's like, but, I mean, they're a business at the end of the day, and they have to look at their numbers. And maybe they finally were, you know, like I said, they're sitting there going, okay, well, how do we get people, you know, it's like, we may have these games that, you know, can get all the best reviews in the world, but how are we going to get people to spend, you know, $200 or $300 on a Wii U instead of a PS4?
Yeah, and I think one of the ways, like, is making these franchises cool again. And
because at the height of its popularity, I mean, like, the, you know, Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, oh my God, I remember seeing, like, TV commercials for those. You never saw anything like that for the recent entries.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on what you're watching and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's, I, you know, like, I enjoy them, but I don't, and I don't think they're necessary. I don't think people don't think of them as good franchises. I just don't think people think of them as the in franchise. Like,
no.
It's not must play games in the sense like, you know, Call of Duty is, Minecraft is.
These are 30-year-old franchises, lest we.
Yeah.
So they're established.
Yeah, and there's ways to inject life into them. I mean, I think Batman is probably the prime. I think Batman and James Bond are probably two of the best examples of franchises that had a peak, diminished for a bit, and then they were able to reinvent themselves. They're Madonna. And I think that this is a good step forward. So, you know, the show turns out terrible or not, I think it's a win-win for Nintendo.
The fact that it's in the Wall Street Journal alone.
Yeah.
You know.
And something positive for them for the first time in a while. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, if the show gets made, it means that they get, you know, if nothing else, they get the Zelda name out there again. I don't necessarily know if they'd have a game, like, they could do, like, a compilation or something. They probably won't have a new game because we have one at the end of the year, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a year and a half, 2 years is enough time to make a new one. And if it sucks, the games are still good. It's just now people have something else to laugh at. And, I'm not saying that these games are infrontable, but I think that nobody's ever going to stop playing a game because their adaptation's terrible.
Of course not. Yeah.
We've had terrible Street Fighter movies. We've had terrible Mortal Kombat movies. We've had terrible Super Mario Brothers movies.
Yeah.
And those franchises are still around 20 years after these movies came out. They'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, it's all... Like, as a huge Zelda fan myself, like, I go, like, ooh, like, I sit here and go, like, man, I'd really love to see this done right, you know, because there is, like, a way, probably. Like, I mean, I work in the film industry and everything, but I'm not, you know, a producer or anything, so, like, I don't have, like, the necessary wisdom to say exactly, like, I can say, oh, this is how I would do it as a fan, but, you know, there's logistics involved and everything, so, like, I'd like to see something this beloved, you know, done right and done respectfully and in a way that really just adds to the already, like, rich, like, you know, franchise. But at the same time, it's like, at the end of the day, like, you know, it's not gonna, like, it may just bring more public consciousness to the fact that, hey, Zelda is still around. Like, I think next year it turns 30, if I'm not mistaken.
It's 87. Because Skyward Sword was the 25th, and that was 2001. Oh, wait, you're all right. So, yes, it's next year.
Yeah, next year's the 30th. And so, which
that would
be
actually
part of why...
That would be a perfect time if they can get production up and running to launch it in November of that year.
And, I mean, you already see that, like, they have talked about reinventing the franchise, like, within the games, you know, like, they've, just to kind of, like, put a bow on that topic, like, Anuma has talked about how, like, they recognize, like, yes, these games, they all have a formula, and we're trying to get away from that. They started that with Link Between Worlds, where it was, like, the whole, with the item rent thing, instead of, like, oh, you have to get the items from the dungeon, it's like, oh, you can just rent them from the outset, and then just do the dungeons in the order you want to, which really...
That actually could make a bit more sense in a TV show, in that he's working towards, like, paying off these items to go on a random quest, and then have him... there's a various amount of ways for this to work. I don't see... Like, we're two smucks on the internet just talking, so I find it weird when people say it's impossible, like, they don't see how the show can work. Like, I think the biggest problem is going to be design. I think structure, story, characters, all of that is in place. Yeah. There's enough of a universe to flesh out and to pick and choose if you want. You can do Zant, you can do Midna, you can do Fee, you can do Navi, you can do King of the Red Seas. There's a ton of side characters, a ton of, you know, Goose, Tingu, Sheik, Impa, ton of characters you can pick and play with if you wanted to do any of that stuff. So to say that, you know, there's no more... I get that the heroes and villains are black and white, but as we said before, there's ways to make the villains complex. You saw that with Wind Waker. There's ways to make the town complex. You see that with Majora's Mask. There's even ways to make the princess multifaceted. We've seen that with Tetra in Wind Waker. We've seen that with her and Impa in Skyward Sword. Mm-hmm. So there are ways to make these characters interesting beyond being these archetypes of the hero, the damsel in distress, and the villain.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing I do want to remember here as well is, we've seen tiny, tiny, tiny bits of what this new game is going to be, but, I mean, supposedly it's this massive open world. So, I mean, we could be completely just off the mark here, and it's like, oh, they're actually just adapting this brand new game into something, because, I mean, like, there's all kinds of crazy theories right now about what the heck is going on in this new game, you know, so, because, like, of how little footage we've actually seen, so, I mean, who knows, like, maybe in a few months when they reveal more footage, it'll become more clear, like, what direction they're going in, but again, like, until there's, you know, actual, like, people attached to it, I mean, it's not really a cause for celebration or concern, but more just kind of like fun speculation, I suppose. Yeah. You know, because until then, I go, you're just saying you're gonna make it.
Yeah, and that's where I am. Ultimately, to me, if the show's not made out, but whatever. If the show is made out, I will obviously check it out, good or bad, because I check out any of this stuff. Yeah. So I understand why people are afraid, but I don't get the reaction to negativity, because ultimately speaking, if this show's utter crap, you still have nearly 30 years of fantastic games that, no matter how terrible the show is, will never wipe it out of your memory. Like I said, we've survived the terrible Resident Evils, Marios, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, House of the Dead, Blood Rain, Postal. There's a crap ton of terrible video game adaptations in all mediums, and we still survive with those franchises because the games trump all. So I'm excited to see what happens with this. I imagine that every decision with this show will be scrutinized, from who they get to write it to, I feel sorry for the person who's cast as Zink, because there is no way he's going to appease everybody.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's just nobody who looks like Link to begin with. it's hysterical to me that they've kept that same hairstyle for so long, because that's such a, like, it's basically like, oh, he more or less has, like, a really, really 80s kind of mullet thing going on.
And at this point, I assume it's iconic. I mean, but the reason it existed was because they needed a way to tell his head from his face. It's a look that stayed, and it's the same. Like, it's always weird, because I didn't notice this until somebody pointed out that his eyebrows are over his hair, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, right now I'm looking at, it's funny, because literally, I think, I'm looking here at the Hyrule Warriors box art, and that's like the one time I've not seen his eyebrows. Like, because if you look at, like,
I think it's really pronounced with the Wind Waker style, with Wind Waker and Phantom Hourglass.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, that's obviously, but like, yeah, with the Twilight Princess look, like, yeah, the eyebrows were not visible, I don't think, through the hair, but yeah, I just think it's hysterical that they've kept this, like, 80s kind of Flock of Seagulls flop all over his head with the giant sideburns, sideburns.
To be fair, I think that's one of the things that fans would probably be okay with them changing a bit. Like, I also would imagine he's not going to always wear the cap.
Yeah.
Because the cap looks goofy, but at the same time, like, I mean, basically he's going to be, I guess, if they do it right, with a cap and a green tunic.
Yeah. For me, all I care is, like, I just don't want them to, like, Ra's al Ghul and arrow him. That's all. Because that guy does, like, I look at him, I'm like, that's just a dude with a goatee. It's not even barely there. It's just stubble. It's not really Ra's al Ghul, unless he has the Fu Manchu.
I am also really concerned. I was going to say, I'm really concerned with, Well, like I said, anything that's coming out of here, it's going to be an interesting ride if it does get made, because, you know, it's going to build up anytime something, like, who's the writer, who's Zink, who's Zelda, how long is it kid friendly, is it Game of Thrones, what's the structure? The first trilogy is going to be one of those insane days on the internet.
Yeah.
I'm curious about all this, and I want to see what comes of it, if anything does come of it. It's going to be a fun ride, if nothing else. I mean, if it's a ride, you know, for all we know, this could be the only time we hear about it. Like, I'm sure somebody's going to, you know, like, even, I think somebody asked Nintendo about the Mario movie during the investors meeting, and they were basically like, yeah, Nintendo gets approached all the time by people, and that was it. That was all you got, and it's like, yeah, so this may be the only time you ever hear about this project.
Yeah, I guess it's just them buying a placeholder, because they're like, oh, this thing's really popular, can we, you know, can we do it? And Nintendo's like, ugh, sure, whatever. It's like, as long as you help us sell Amiibos.
I can't wait for the Legend of Zelda TV show Amiibos Netflix exclusive.
The ones no one will buy. They'll be in surplus. It'll be like the Donkey Kong and Kirby ones that you can find everywhere.
that's another topic for another day. But I do want to say thank you for joining me to discuss this. Like I said, we're both on the same page. Like, you know, we're cautious that this show may ever be made, but we're kind of excited in what's to come. And yes, there are concerns and worries, but it's an exciting prospect if it's done right. Or if it's done terribly. I like terrible things if it's done right.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good life philosophy right there.